Brahmacha loka dipati sahampati katanjali anadivaram ayachata sandida sata parajaka jatika de se tu dhammam anukampimam pajam.
Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sama sambuddhassa buddhang dhammang sanghang namassami. Well, it's lovely to be back with the VIMS, the Victoria Insight Meditation Society. Beautifully organized, friendly, lovely. And this is a year when I've kind of committed to stop traveling. So this might be the last kind of formal visit. June said that I had been here 6 times in 7 years, so it's good. I haven't, it's all a blur for me, but so it's really nice to be here with a full crowd at this wonderful historic house. And the lovely atmosphere of Victoria and the Victoria Insight Meditation Society and my various friends, and the joy of doing these things with other people as well, including Margot last night, and our Upasaka group. Upasakas are the definition is kind of people who come close to the monks. And monasteries don't run by, monks don't make monasteries by themselves. Monks have no resources, and they're not allowed to have any resources, except for their minds. And monasteries are built by lay communities, and their physical places, and places like this are arranged and made to come into existence again by lay communities. I didn't come down here at midnight and clean the place for you or set out the chairs. This all happens mysteriously and graciously and generously behind the scenes. And this is the Buddhist community, the Sangha, is spread out through it. It permeates society. It flavors everything. And the farther I travel, the more it develops over time. When I was first in the West, it was a very rare and esoteric thing. And now it's much more, it's everywhere. I can go into a Home Depot and somebody will come up and go like this to me. And so my wife's at a retreat right now, and I just, you're a monk, right? Yeah, so, you know, so. Before, I mean, 30 years ago, I would have been captured by the police or something, but so it's quite something. I was up on Cortez Island, and 1% of the island comes to the monastery, actually, 1% of the population there. There's only 900 people on the island, but a dozen of them come to the monastery. I like to put it the other way. Like, the statistics are more impressive when I say 1% of the entire island comes, 12 people. So it's and this sense of community and so forth will continue, and I hope that many of you will visit the monastery, and I'll keep it up through media, through videos and audio Dhamma talks. You'll be able to put a talk on by Ajahn Sona at midnight, and I'll put you to sleep. Hopefully I don't put you to sleep this weekend. Although it's not supposed to be entertaining. But it's supposed to be, the energy is supposed to be enough to, in fact, energy is an extraordinarily important part of the teaching. Without energy, if our life feels, if we're not energized, that's a core experience of life. And the Dhamma, teachings of the Buddha, is about the fulfillment of life to its the highest possibility. It's not about just getting through. It's about always asking for more. Now, that's a weird thing to say because Buddhism is often, you hear that it's about non-desire or the absence, you know, the reduction of desire, craving, or that the root of suffering is craving, but it's not. There are certain types of craving for certain things that increase, that are cause distress or suffering or sense of lack, but there's also other kinds of desires and aspirations. Maybe that's a better word, aspirations. And the Buddha was very clear that you need to have a strong aspiration to your own sense of well-being, and this a type of well-being that is stable and continuous through in your ordinary life. So the idea that don't just settle for extraordinary moments, the occasional extraordinary moment for happiness, but most of your life, most people's lives, 99%, 99.9% are ordinary. And it's that ordinary, huge amounts of ordinary time that do not need to be just gone through, just filled in. There can be an experience of upwelling well-being, happiness, full heart of goodwill spreading throughout the world, and that all of the issues which we will face in life of our journey through life, of our aging, of sicknesses and loss and death, and sometimes, of course, gain and all of the things that can happen in life will be met with well-being, stability, clarity, and energy. So you're all here to make effort today, but a beautiful effort. It's not a grim type of work that you're doing. In fact, we're going for a swim. We're going to swim across a river to the other side, and we're going to use both hands and both feet. And so this is the description the Buddha gives of right effort. He says we're all in a situation. When we're born, we're not enlightened. And what does enlightenment mean? An enlightened person is a happy, well-adjusted person who can maintain this well-being, stability, and clarity in the midst of all the vagaries and changes, uncertainties of life. That's what it is. Other thing, you know, any kind of extraordinary psychic capacities or lights or anything like that are just not the important thing. Important thing is it possible to be a well and happy, gentle and compassionate and generous human being? Is that possible? That's enlightenment. And and you, to the degree you see that in others, the degree that you experience that in others, is just the degree that you're sensing this light, you know, as opposed to darkness. I mean, when people are dangerous and do not view others as themselves, there's a darkness around that. And when the opposite happens, when people open-heartedly understand that you are one of them, you are them in some sense, dear to them, and that there's nothing more delightful than to share with you or with them, etc. Then you're seeing the experience of light. And you know, when you see these paintings with halos behind saints and so forth, that light is just that. Any other interpretations of this, when we're looking for extraordinary kind of magical side events, is really what these kind of things apparently happen, but they're little ornaments or little sparkles. It's like the snow under the full moon, you know, there's little sparkles on it, but it's that's just one of the little side effects of snow. You know, snow is another element that has a function and a beauty to it, an essential quality. So the essential qualities that we're developing in this meditation today is just I'm here because I want to be happy. It's not possible to be human and not want to be happy, and I want to be happy in a very deep way, an emotional way, in a way that I feel throughout my whole body, my whole mind. And I want this to happen as soon as possible. I now wish, just wishing that it would happen is not enough. So we're here to keep asking ourselves the question, you know, how am I feeling? What am I thinking? And what's the side effect of that feeling? And if it's not beautiful, it's not, if I'm not well, then I should change my mind. And it's so my approach to this, and many of you have gone to all kinds of retreats perhaps and done various vipassanas and all these words, but I tend to, one of the features of the teachings of the Buddha, which is not emphasized enough, is choice. It's a series of choices you're making. You're not simply being yourself. You're not simply going with the normal habit and conditioning of your ordinary self. When monks and nuns go forth, they're given 10 subjects for frequent recollection. And one of them is, I must not act in my old habitual ways anymore. I'm not that anymore. And we have to decide if we want to do any transformation. We cannot just be on automatic pilot anymore. We can't just fall back on our old habits, because unless you're very, very rare and unfortunate person, you probably don't have the kind of habits that give you maximum well-being in life. And so those things have to be set aside. You have to recognize them first, set them aside, and choose a new route. So fresh, new experiences. And it may be strange to you. You're all growing up and think, I've been there, done that. I know who I am. I got my limits, my boundaries, and so forth. It's a great opportunity to challenge that idea. Can I experience in a new way, a different way? What if I decide to set this feeling and thought aside? And what if I seek ways to bring into new existence a different feeling about life? So this is under right effort. This is the sixth factor of the Eightfold Path, right effort. There are four right efforts. One is the prevention of the arising of unwholesome mental states. That is, unwholesome is like negative emotional states infused with any kind of ill will or lack, a sense of lack, a sense of agitation, fear, anxiety, depression, worry, flurry, doubt, all the kind of negative emotional structures. We call them the hindrances. They're actually very specifically, the explicitly, the Buddha saying, don't stop them before they start. Don't allow those things to arise. Second is, now this is like one hand. We're swimming across the river, remember? That's one hand, prevention. The other one is removal. So if such things have happened, we have to remove them. They could be, you thought of as weeding. So we have to remove this. And then there are beautiful states that sometimes we get into a lovely mood. And we rejoice in the mood, but quite often we forget that we, you know, I'd like this to actually last longer. I'd like to continue this. How do I, how do I investigate this so that it continues? And so this is sustaining and maintaining. So the Buddha is saying, you know, if you do find a little moment of joy in the world, a moment of relaxation and where everything makes sense, cherish that, carry that, nourish that, protect that, keep your eye on that. See how long you can keep this going. That's one foot in this swimming. You're going to swim with both hands, both feet. And the other one is that I bet there's all kinds of beautiful experiences I haven't had, but that a human could have. And I'm a human, so I could probably find them. Somewhere in there, people found places. Somewhere inside me are places that I haven't been. You know, you're raised in all kinds of situations, educational situations, family situations, where they keep directing your attention to some single kind of attitude or emotional or defining you. And sometimes it's a very limited, difficult, or it's a kind of a thing that you just endure. Life is to be endured. But other parts of you have not, there's doors that you've never opened. You walk down this hallway every day to the door to the office and go in there, but there's a whole all these doors. What is behind those doors? So this is the exploration to see there's incredible possibilities of what the human mind can do. And it's not just not the intellectual mind, it's the mind that pervades the body, it's the emotional, whole texture of emotions. Where are those? Can I fish around for those? Can I open a door and like walk in? You might find that there's an entire, you're in this gigantic, mysterious house, and there are whole areas, entire ballrooms that you've not been in. So this is to explore, deepen, and cultivate those beautiful possibilities that have not been explored. Some people have explored thoroughly the worst parts of the basement. They've waded through all kinds of debris and the worst kind of things. They've been down there and thoroughly explored that. But and perhaps they're convinced that they were supposed to, that they're supposed to live down there or something. These are messages that need to be let go of. The Buddha is saying, you're nothing, which is another way of saying you have every possibility. It's because you aren't a thing that you have possibilities. Thank goodness you're not a thing. Thank goodness you're nothing. It would be a great tragedy to be a rock, an unchanging thing that just moved through time and couldn't change, couldn't. None of that makes sense. You're not any of those things. You're just flows and processes and all kind of your recipes just waiting to get mixed together. So this is the thing to explore in the most uplifting, beautiful, and human way. We're not asking you to do anything superhuman. We're asking you to do, because you're humans, how do humans get to be above human? They can't start above human. They have to start as human. So this is, you start using your mind in a different way. You start doing things that are not the ordinary, and you get extraordinary results. So this is the, last night we talked about gardening and so forth. It's about understanding how to get the right process for getting that beautiful head of lettuce in the garden. And there are process. If people have them, you gotta ask, how do you do that? How do you get that beautiful tomato or garden? We had a nice tomatoes this morning from a very special. Where's the tomato people? there are little magic secrets to this, you know. But you have to be delighted, you know. This is a gardening. A weekend of gardening, that sounds nice, doesn't it? It's a weekend of recipes. It's a weekend of samples. It's a weekend of fine tea making. This is the theme from last night's talk, how to make a good cup of tea. First, read the instructions. Yeah. And keep asking for more. So this is also an aspiration to more. And it's not tension. You're not creating any tension in yourself. You can't insist that something happens which has no cause to it. You can't hope that something just appears and you never put in the right causes for. So that's what we're also doing. We're trying to skillfully put in the right causes that do produce these beautiful results. And so I spent the last 35 years or so meditating, and now I can confidently tell you that good, one amazing things will happen. It's not out of a book anymore for me. It's that, and I get to see people over that I've watched meditate for 25 years or 30 years, and I see the changes that they go through and the new understandings that they have. I got an email from a fellow that I haven't seen for 20 years, and he, 20 years later, he wrote to me in gratitude, and he said, the last thing you told me was that now that I've had this experience with meditation and so forth, things are not going to be the same. Your future is different. It's going to be better, and you have no idea what the effects are going to be. And so he's saying, now it's 20 years has passed, and you are right. So I just wanted to write to you and just say that it has been very, very good. And I know it wouldn't have been like this if I hadn't taken that step into it. So I can say these things with more, direct experience, and decades and decades have gone by. And so I can say it with confidence rather than from a theory or from a book. And so the beautiful possibilities are there, and never doubt that. And it's easy enough to say never doubt that. And of course, the first thing your mind does is doubt it. That's to be human. And when you doubt, by the way, so what you do with doubt is just set it aside. Say, well, if it's not possible, I guess I'll find out. But I should give it a try. I should explore these ideas. So one of these main things is, first of all, it's just reduction of, it's not just a mere thinking process. It's more of an observational process, like being out in the garden and just looking for things that are not supposed to be there, the weeds that are not supposed to be there. And even, pulling weeds is quite a joyful experience. This doesn't have to be a bad experience, You're clearing the garden for the arising of other positive things. And so this is the, as things come, as you lose your concentration, as you drift away, and then you find out you've drifted again, and then you think, I guess I can't do this, or something like this. No. Every time you catch yourself drifting is a moment of success. You stop the... Many people go through their whole life, never occurs to them to interrupt their own thinking process. Never occurs to them to change their mind. And it has occurred to you to do this. And when you do this, when you catch yourself drifting and stop it and bring it back, that's a moment of success. So every time you do that, every time you finally catch yourself, it's not a moment of failure, it's a moment of success. Because that's not what ordinary people do. And so we're disbelieving in the negative possibilities of human life. We're disbelieving in that. And we're believing that there are amazing possibilities. So all in the end, it's a form of civil disobedience. You're just not going along with it anymore. It's a peaceful confrontation with negative energies, and you refuse to participate in the negative energies because it's just not right. It's not human. It's not dignified. So you just say, you know, whatever. Others shall be angry. I shall not. Others will be greedy and stingy and miserly. I shall not. Others will be confused and anxious. I shall not. I don't want to participate in that anymore. It's not what I want to do with my human life. And others are generous, I also will be that way. Others are kindly, I also will be that way. It's possible. So, but these are choices, and you have to make the positive choices. So it's an abrupt. It's not a lot like analytical psychology. It's abrupt. It's an abrupt interruption of a story and the taking up of a new identity at that very moment. You just switching identities, because there is no identity. It's just a matter of choices. Choices that flow through time, and you make a positive choice, and you enter that stream. And if you notice that the stream dissolves on you, then you get back, and you get back into that, raise that stream again. So we will now take an opportunity for meditation. But first, before we do, I think just maybe just do a little bit of standing meditation for 5 minutes to stretch your legs and so forth.